episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, where history proves that truth, or at least their version of it, is truly stranger than fiction. I grew up in a background where there was a religious movement that spiritualized everything. And when I say everything, I mean everything. There were people that if they went to the grocery store and the grocery store didn't have their favorite brand of toothpaste and they had to buy some other brand of toothpaste, they would think God had divinely inspired the grocery store to be out of that toothpaste so that they could get the other brand because they needed it for some cavity. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it was pretty close to that. People spiritualized everything. And usually, in the type of movement we were in, usually the spiritualization wasn't on the things that were helpful, but they were on the things that were harmful. Because the movement capitalized on the fears of the people, they would try to rile them up by telling them that at every turn, at every corner that you make in life, you're going to find these demons that are out to get you. And in fact, we had an entire series called Demonology that we listened to how the demons were out to get us. And rather than instilling a comfort to the parishioners of the churches that we attended, they would send you fear instead of comfort so that you would be scared that God was powerless to save you unless you had the spiritual insight of the leader, whoever the leader may be. Well, that was a huge part of the healing revival culture. From its inception, this thing developed from a fear, and there were actually multiple fears, the biggest of which obviously was this was coming on the heels of World War II, and after World War II, there was this brief period of comfort and peace where people thought, okay, this is it, that was the big one, never again. But shortly after that, people started fearing that there would be another one. There would be another global war, and that would be Armageddon. And the fears of Armageddon spread throughout the movement. Interestingly, that's not the only thing that spread throughout the movement. There were some fears that were just out of this world. I'll say it like that. The fears of the UFO culture. Because if you think about the timeline, 1947, that's whenever the Latter Rain movement was birthed, when William Branham and his team of evangelists started to grow and they started to sweep through the United States and Canada. That was 1947. Well, at the same time, we have another thing happening in world history. UFOs and little green men. I kid you not. There were so many widespread fears that Martians or moon men were invading the United States and flying saucers. And believe it or not, we'll get into this history in a bit, but believe it or not, it was making its way into the healing revivals. And William Branham, who was the leader of the revival, was not any exception to this rule. If you study what he says closely and then compare it to the timeline, he is talking about UFOs. In fact, in some cases, he even mentions flying saucers. So we'll get into that history in a bit, but I was reminded of this recently whenever Perry Stone, who is an open supporter of William Branham, he started claiming that he had a secret meeting with members in the know in Washington, and they were warning pastors that suddenly we're going to let all of this information out, and when we do, the American public, you ministers need to contain this because the public are going to suddenly learn that there are Martians, or I can't remember how he said it exactly, but it was, in my opinion, it matched very eerily similar to what we saw in history. So I wanted to go through that history, but keep in mind, this is Perry Stone, who endorses William Branham, who recently even, he started claiming that William Branham was a very accurate prophet. He started going through his 1933 prophecies, which we have fully debunked at this point. And, you know, Perry Stone was familiar with the ministry of William Branham. If he was that familiar where he can say that he believes in these seven prophecies, he would have also been familiar with all of the UFO stuff that William Branham taught. In fact, if you read what he's saying and read what Branham is saying, it's pretty similar. So let's get into that history a bit. Let's talk through, well, first let's talk through the UFO history. In June of 1947, about the same time that William Branham's fame began to spread and the healing revival started to pick up steam, it was widely reported throughout newspapers carried by the Associated Press that flying saucers had visited the United States. And all of this huge wave of UFO sightings didn't really play any effect in the healing revival itself at that point, but it was in the back of the minds of everybody who was in that audience. And I'm certain if you were attending the healing revivals, I'm certain there were people who were talking about it. They would ask questions like, well, what is this? And the movement, as I said earlier, it tries to spiritualize everything. So in the back of the minds, everybody's thinking, oh my gosh, we're seeing these flying discs. What are these things? And what is the spiritual implications of these flying saucers? The next major escalation was July 8th, 1947, when the Roswell Army Field announced that it had recovered a flying disc. And it produced the famous, it's now famous, the Roswell Daily Record headline that if you read through the histories of UFO sightings, this is a big one, right? This claim was walked back within, I think it was a day, as this was balloon debris, but the headline had already spread and panic started to ensue. So you have a public that is being given information about flying saucers. You got the same public that is starting to learn that, wow, this healing revival is beginning to spread. And even the casual person who wasn't really Pentecostal started to see the combination of two of these things and just kind of had to scratch their head, right? Any who were in the same mindset that I was in, where you spiritualize everything, you started to wonder, well, we just came through the world wars. The Bible said there would be wars and rumors of wars. That was one of the themes that was carried through the revival, that passage that they quoted from the Bible. They were starting to link these things together as, well, this must be the end of days, right? And sadly, the revivalists started to capitalize on the fears that were starting to build within the United States. And again, the fear of UFO had not yet set in, but it was starting to come at the same time. So in the background of everybody's mind, they're thinking through this. Now, Voice of Healing magazine, which was started by William Branham to promote his ministry, eventually taken over by Gordon Lindsay. It would later evolve to Christ for the Nations, which is a big institution that trains many leaders of the New Apostolic Reformation and works in tandem with them. They began producing articles that were prophesying to make the people's fears greater. So that, I don't know the intentions, but it appears that it would be so that the people attending the revival would be more attentive and start to believe that, well, things must be coming to a close. The world is about to end. We're starting to see flying saucers, and we just came through World War II. We're about to go through World War III. So in the Voice of Healing magazine, a series of articles was published entitled The World in Prophecy, Sidelights and Incidents of World Events in the Light of Prophecy. And in this series of articles, the authors were given the opportunity to connect all of the many world events and tell people just how much they needed to fear. In fact, I'll read you a section here. In one of the columns, actually this is the very first of the series, it has in bold letters the number 666. And it says, time is running out, and the days of this present age are numbered. Men who are guiding the affairs of this world in most cases little realize that there is one greater than they who is ruling and overruling. Man proposes, but God disposes. Had we the space, we might demonstrate some interesting things which reveal the manner in which events in this world are being guided according to a pattern. We shall give one example and perhaps next month carry the demonstration at further length. And then it poses the question. The question is, are world events occurring at random, or are they following a demonstrable time pattern, thus evidencing a supreme being who is overruling the history of the world? In other words, the history of the world is coming to a close, the overruler is coming to destroy, so on and so forth. This came on the heels of one of the more famous UFO encounters. The article was published in August 1948, just days after the Childs-Witted UFO encounter, where two Eastern Airline pilots reported a glowing high-speed object near Montgomery, Alabama. And that backed what all of the newspapers were saying, because these were trained pilots and aviation professionals who were starting to see these unidentified flying objects. And again, the UFO sightings were completely separate from the healing revival movement at this point in time. But as all of these fears are mounting in the background, the World in Prophecy in September of 1948 published a diagram. And in the diagram, you can look at it. I've got it on the screen if you're watching the YouTube version of this. It's entitled "Remarkable Demonstration of the Manner in Which World Events Are Occurring, Not at Random, but Readily Recognized Time Patterns or Time Measures." And right under that, they put "Bible Key," and they gave you the quote from Revelation 13:18. "Here is wisdom. Let he who hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man. His number is 666," or 666, which everybody knows is the the evil number, right? So what they did, if you look at this diagram, they took time spans of 666 days and then read through history to see what happened during that time span, and listed all of the oh my gosh events that could happen during that series of time. The interesting part about this exercise is you could do the same thing if you use 333 or 1818, pretty much any number that you take. If you want to calculate time spans based on that range, you are going to find a world event happening during that time span. And it's all in how you present it to the people. So this is no coincidence. Whoever wrote this article, and I believe it's Gordon Lindsay, his name is at the bottom, he literally took the number 666, which is going to instill fear in the hearts, and then categorized and divided all of the time that is leading up to the current day, saying, look, I found these events that happened in a time span of 666. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, right? So I would love to do this and use 333, but I'll let one of you do the math on that. It's nonsense, but that's what they were doing, is presenting nonsense to the people. Well, this nonsense continued into what would eventually become a series of doomsday prophecies. The movement, as it continued to grow and develop, they focused so heavily on the end of days because this set the pace for the doomsday themes that emerged in the Latter Rain movement. I know Branham is famous for his 1977 doomsday prediction, and you can find all kinds of things on the internet if you want to look that up, but 1977 wasn't his only doomsday prediction. And in fact, if you go to the website and you just type in doomsday, you can find, I've got all kinds of information on this. These people continued to instill fear that the current year, usually the current political campaign, was marking the end of days. That's how this movement was to develop. And it developed from this, from Gordon Lindsay setting the pace that we're in doomsday. We're in 666, people. Be scared, because I have divided time into categories of 666 days. Well, that theme continued to build and grow, and people started to link in their minds all of the different things that were happening within the current events of time. That is something that Lindsay and Branham and others were successfully able to do, to convince the movement that we are at the end, we have divided into 666 days, and now if you look at any world event, I don't care what it is, try to find something that's similar to that event in the Bible. And they were doing this. They would look at, like, May 1948, the state of Israel is established. Well, if you are in the British Israel camp, this is an important day for you. Even if you're not a British Israelite, you start to think, well, what about all of the scriptures talking about Israel? This must be the end of days. This must be the end of days. Well, eventually this end of days theme started to attract people who had notions about flying saucers. And William Branham was one of the foremost leaders of the revivals. By 1953, he's openly talking about the fears that we should have of flying saucers. I'll read you a quote from 1953, a sermon entitled Speak to the Rock. He said, underground jet planes going out from under the ground like that. Under there was an atomic bomb, just ready. You can fly the whole world around in just a little bit with an atomic bomb. And they can send these saucers out across the nation, drop a bomb, and in 20 minutes time explode the whole earth. So fast forward to today. We have seen, now it's called UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon, they give it instead of UFO, mainly because there have been so many different types of sightings that they're not sure if it's yet an object or if it is just something that is a phenomenon that people are seeing. The United States government, the Pentagon, or now they call it the Department of War, has released a trove of documents about UFOs and what they call UAPs. To those of us who have been interested and have studied in the past about flying saucers and its history, most of what they released was nothing new. Although I will admit, as I was reading through it, there were some things that I didn't know. Like I did not know that during the moon landings, they actually saw things that could have been out of this world. But the majority of the things that I read, as I'm reading through this documentation they're releasing, most of it was no surprise at all. What was a surprise leading up to the release of those documents, Perry Stone, who's a well-known evangelist, author, Bible teacher from Tennessee, somebody we've mentioned from time to time, he began warning before the release of documents. He claimed that he had a secret meeting with U.S. intelligence and that the U.S. intelligence officials were about to release the secret files on the extraterrestrials, which if you read the documents, there is, I think there might be one mention of some thing that they saw that looked like a smaller person, but there was no real mention of extraterrestrials. But according to Stone, the officials had warned a small group of ministers with a large reach in the Christian community that the government was about to release these reports and that possibly there would be videos of aliens and spacecraft which were not of this planet. And essentially what he was trying to say, if you listen to what he has said and read some of the news reports about it, he was trying to say that the release of this information would be so impactful that we would see a large number of people who would leave Christianity because we have seen now this extraterrestrial life. And they, in fact, one of the articles I was reading was talking about the comments made about the book of Genesis and the difference between what they're seeing with the UFOs, as though there was going to be some massive revelation from these files. And again, I read through them myself. You read through it and they're not talking about anything new. There's nothing really that astounding. In fact, there's not enough information really to conclusively say what it is that they saw. Although there are some interesting facts, which, you know, if you're interested and you want to look, you can just type in UFO files or UFO documents. You can find these for yourself, but what I did find most interesting is that while telling the public that there was no such thing, the government is not investigating UFOs, all of this stuff, what I found interesting was in the reports, the way in which they documented it, there were several data points that they were collecting, and it was an organized set of data points. When you go from document to document to document, you can see that they're talking about how was it propelled, what was the shape, all of the different aspects of it. I can't remember the list, but there were data points that were collected way back when. And then in modern documents, I came across a couple where it appears that they have added a data point for payload, which is fascinating to me. They're really tracking alien payloads, right? Well, This kind of stuff, I guess, scared Perry Stone because he was thinking, oh my gosh, we're going to see an exodus of people who now believe UFOs and no longer believe Christianity. That was the fear that he is trying to apparently instill into the people. And again, it's just a distraction from the original truth. Whenever people study Christianity, study the Bible, and read what it says, it's not supposed to be a religion that is based off of fear. And in fact, there's a Bible quote, perfect love casts out all fear. So it goes to show when you're trying to build a movement and you're trying to use fear to further grow that movement. Fear is the thing that you focus on most. It shows that you don't have perfect love because perfect love casts out fear. That's straight from the Bible. That's not what this movement was doing. 1950 was a big year in UFO history, and not just for the healing revivalists, I'm talking about for the nation at large. In January of 1950, Donald Kehoe's The Flying Saucers Are Real appeared in The True magazine, and this was probably the most influential mainstream UFO set of articles. Kehoe argued that the saucers were real and possibly extraterrestrial. They weren't just hoaxes or hallucinations. And this article helped move the UFO discussion into a serious national conversation. That national conversation included both from the healing revivalist and the non-healing revivalist. Everybody began talking about it. March of 1950, Farmington, New Mexico, a UFO armada was reported. Hundreds of people reportedly saw shiny objects over Farmington for several days, and that story became part of the UFO folklore. And suddenly that began connecting for the religious community, Bible passages like, there will be signs in the heavens, and all of the different passages of scripture where people could tie things are happening in the heavens, we don't understand, to look, the world is ending, and we're dividing days into 666 day categories, right? That was March of 1950. In May, Paul and Evelyn Trent took photos of UFOs that became among the most famous flying saucer images. They were published in June locally, but then spread throughout Life magazine, for example, published them. And for religious audiences, now these photographs were giving credibility to the saucer claim. And it was visible evidence that we've got to talk about this. And that's what the healing revivalists began to do. They started to talk about it. The very next month, Gordon Lindsay published an article in The Voice of Healing under the column This Month's Prophetic Article, entitled Prophetic Significance of the Flying Saucer. And in this article, he started to talk about the serious question that has now arisen. We see all of the flying saucers are being cited and published in the newspapers. It's held the American public attention, and the question has remained, do the saucers actually exist, or are they a figment of human imagination? And Lindsay began to argue that, well, no, these are prophetic significant events, and we need to tie those back to the world is about to end, because everything goes back to the world is about to end. That is how the movement developed. That's how it continued. That is what they wanted to project to the people. And they actually, Lindsay actually had a photograph that was taken from copy that I guess he got from Fate magazine. It says actual photographs of flying saucers courtesy of Fate magazine. And I'll pause right there for anybody who is unfamiliar with Fate. Fate was an occult paranormal Reader's Digest type magazine for people who are interested in UFOs and psychic phenomenon, ghosts, strange but true reports. This was not your normal news that he got this image from. He got it from the most absurd place for a Christian minister or Christian evangelist to get it from. So there's a copy, there's literally a photograph of a Fate magazine photo in The Voice of Healing. It's crazy funny when you think about it. So then, taking it right out of the playbook of Fate magazine, Gordon Lindsay shifted The Voice of Healing to do kind of the same thing, which is a large problem with how the movement later would develop. In the Voice of Healing, they started publishing things like this issue is, Signs in Earth, Air, and Sky Foretell the Imminent Return of Jesus Christ. And they even have a photograph of a cloud formation that they say looks like Jesus Christ, but you can see they probably sketched just a little bit inside of the photograph to make it look like the cloud is showing Jesus with his arms open wide. I assume, based off of the way that I see this sketched, I assume that the actual face part was the pin drawing, and the outside rim of the cloud formation is just a cloud that, yes, it might look like some arm stretch, but who knows? But at the bottom, it's got captions like you'd read in the National Enquirer magazine or Fate magazine. Don't fail to read dramatic report of God's dealing in Kansas City disaster. And think of the televangelists today. Think of all of these people that anytime there's a tsunami, there's an earthquake, there's some catastrophic event, they say, God is destroying the earth. Well, that's where all of this came from. That's how this developed. They were showing prophetic signs. They were trying to connect an event. Doesn't matter what the event was, but especially if it was a devastating event, they're going to try to connect that to something biblical and say, be afraid. That's really what they're doing. Be afraid, people. So I read through this and it blows your mind, really. Here's another example. The Voice of Healing, August 1951. World disaster impending. Present mass revivals is the world's hope. And they go through and they list all of the different disasters that are happening and saying, you know, they're tying events like Hiroshima. They, at the bottom, it even says, be sure to read the Voice of Healing correspondent's report of Hiroshima tragedy in Japan today. This is much like you would see if you were in the grocery store and you see all of those weird magazines right there at the checkout that just have these obnoxious titles to try to get you to grab the magazine and read, and it's really just really nonsense. Well, that's how the movement was developing. And this is 1950. Whenever all of these ministers and evangelists say, William Branham was God's prophet, but he went astray later. Well, think about this. This is where the movement sat in 1950, not the later, right? This is back whenever they're talking about he was a man of God. Well, they're talking about UFOs, and they're getting it directly from Fate magazine. That's how bad this is. And it affected the movement. It really did. If you go through and read any of the revivalists of that era, I'll use another one. O.L. Jaggers, one of the famous healing evangelists, Voice of Healing evangelists, who was heavily advertised in the Voice of Healing, in the Shrine Auditorium in 1953, held a series of meetings, and his subject was, who are the little men in the flying saucers? And he asked the questions, what was the disc that was chased by a Marine pilot over Southern California last week? Proving this disc did have a little man as a pilot. What was the 8-inch disc that passes U.S. pilots over Japan and Korea? And where did it come from? Proving there was a little man in the 8-inch disc. Irrefutable proof that flying saucers and little men in flying saucers do exist. Proof that there will be little men in flying saucers in the future than there have ever been in the past. Not a fantastic mess. Let me repeat that. Not a fantastic message. And he's advertising his latest book, which is happens to be entitled Flying Saucers. And it says, this sermon is the result of 10 years of research by Reverend Jaggers. So for 10 years, he's been researching these flying saucers. And it says in bold here, Reverend Jaggers will prove that little men from 1 inch tall to as high as a mountain actually exist and are perfectly described in the Bible. So this thing was nonsense, but that's what the healing evangelists were doing. They were taking concepts from places like Fate magazine, not just Fate, but things that they could tell were entertaining to the people and just out there enough to be absurd, but yet vaguely similar. And I'm using that very, very loosely, vaguely similar, eerily similar to something that they could point to in a passage from the Bible that makes people wonder, huh, I wonder if that could be. I see there is a similarity there. It sounds really weird, but let's just go with it, because that's what the revivalists are doing.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. By the mid-1950s, the Voice of Healing revivalists, the Latter Rain revivalists, evangelicalism in general, were widespread experts on UFOs. As funny as that sounds, O.L. Jaggers, who I mentioned was very, very popular in the healing revival movement, he started talking about how these UFOs, these flying saucers, were coming down and they were kidnapping human beings from Earth. And he had proof of this. In fact, he advertised this and he held a revival at the San Francisco Revival Center. And he said he had documented proof from governmental sources that flying saucers do exist, and positive proof there are little men in flying saucers from 6 inches tall to 30 inches in height. He gave the had the names and addresses of people that had been kidnapped by flying saucers, and this is the funniest part. He advertised the revival as not a fantastic message. This is based on scientific and biblical facts and 10 years of research. So 10 years of research made O.L. Jaggers realize that there are little green men and they're coming down and they're kidnapping people. That and that was not unique to him. That was something that was flowing through the revivals. It's unbelievable. It's really unbelievable. There were people like V.W. Grant, who was also very popular. He had a pamphlet that he distributed called Men in the Flying Saucers Identified, Not a Mystery. And this is something that you don't really hear about when you hear God's generals. You don't hear that the generals were warning people that little green men, 6 inches tall, were coming and kidnapping people and trying to instill fear into the hearts of all of their parishioners and their attendees at the revivals. You're going to be caught by this little green man that's only 6 inches tall if you don't come and get right with God. That's what they were saying. In fact, this man in the flying saucers identified. I wish to goodness that this history was preserved and not lost to time, because it has, look at the chapter titles. I went on board a flying saucer. I saw and talked to the men in the flying saucers. The men in the flying saucers will soon return. You just don't hear sermons like this in today's New Apostolic Reformation. Now, Perry Stone is resurrecting this old theology, apparently, so maybe we might see it in the future. I don't know. I honestly actually hope they start talking about little green men. I really do. They produce enough fiction in the New Apostolic Reformation. Why not reintroduce that same fiction? They're resurrecting all kinds of things, and people can obviously see that there's something wrong with this. Really, obviously, that's why this is a race to time. You just don't find this kind of thing in today's world, right? But that is what they were doing. As I mentioned earlier, Gordon Lindsay, he was the editor of Voice of Healing. He was he's the founder of Christ for the Nations Institute. We've talked about how influential that institution is to most of the NAR. You find so many people that were trained under this, and they're being trained, really, if you think about it, they're being trained with Branhamism, but it's not got the name Branhamism, because Gordon Lindsay and William Branham together started this whole thing. That's how this evolved. Gordon Lindsay had a book entitled The Riddle of the Flying Saucers. And again, this is not something that you often hear in history. He had many different publications that he was promoting this idea that there were flying saucers, but he did it, as I mentioned, in The Voice of Healing. There, I've got a cover here of The Voice of Healing magazine. There's a compilation that's entitled UFO Aliens Seeing in the Heavens and Divine Intervention, the Collected Issues of The Voice of Healing. And on the front, it's got the alien V formations. It's got a picture from Lubbock, Texas. The first sighting of the V formation is August 25th, 1951. There were photos August 30th, 1951, another V formation. And then there's one that's called the Lubbock Lights. You can see all of this right in the Voice of Healing issues. So people who were joining into the revivals were going to the booths before they get into the conventions. They were picking up these magazines, and they were learning that little green men were coming to get them. That was what was in the revival. It is so unbelievable. But when you look at today's revival, and you look at how they condemn the other cults, people like the Heaven's Gate cult, these revivalists will claim, see what the world has. They go off into these extremes. They'll talk UFOs. They'll talk Heaven's Gate cult. I actually heard a minister say something like this. I tried to find it for the podcast, but I can't remember who said it. But they were talking about the Heaven's Gate cult, and they came from this same lineage. They came from the lineage of evangelists talking about little green men. That's how weird this is. You can't make this stuff up, right? Well, the V formation theology, it actually turned into a theology. It entered the prophetic, and that is where this turns really dark and sinister. To give some background of this, I want to read some of William Branham's statements about flying saucers, because remember, he was the foremost leader of the healing revivals. He was the person everybody was trying to mimic. They were all trying to rebuild a ministry just like his. People like Paul Kane would advertise themselves in the newspaper saying, another Branham. That's how famous Branham was and how respected his theology was. Well, he was no exception to this UFO theology rule, and he said things that were building up to the UFO theology in the early 50s. Here's a quote from 1953. He says, "You see signs appearing, wonders appearing, mysterious things happening, flying saucers through the air and everything else. Jesus said there'd be signs in the heaven above and in the earth below." So that statement itself, it's a little harmless. It's not that bad. But that's how the progression began. It entered into the theology. Now we have a UFO theology. We're connecting the signs in the heaven to the UFOs. And through that connection, we can point it back to the Bible. So now we have a biblical answer for this thing that is happening that we can't explain. In other words, we're going to spiritualize this thing we can't explain. We're going to use the Bible passage to explain it. And now we are in control of the information. We are in the know, and the rest of the world has no clue. That was really what was being pitched. And it, like I said, it's a little bit harmless in the way that it's pitched, but if you understand all of the background theology that goes with that, it's insidious. It really, really is. So that was 1953. In 1954, the question was starting to form in the minds of the people attending the conventions. And in 1954, one of them came in the form of a question that was submitted to William Branham. And the question was this: what are the flying saucers, and are they something from God sending out for a sign? I'm asking you to stay another week. Please stay another week. So this is coming from a person. If the question is legitimate, there are some questions as to whether the questions themselves are legitimate, but it was a question that was posed before the people, went out onto recording, and was distributed widely among all of the followers of William Branham and the revivalists. So, in other words, even if the question wasn't real, it was something that was that went out and was distributed into the minds of the people so that then they could have the same question, but more than that, they could have Branham's answer. And Branham gets into details. I won't even go into this. You could read it if you want. The tape index is 1954-0515. But The point I'm trying to make is it was developing into a question by 1954 that the congregation needed answers for. And then what Branham did was he tried to take the theology of the signs in the heavens, but then combine it with his doomsday theology. And so he started combining it with levels of destruction. Also in 1954, he said, when Jesus said the tidal waves would break the shores up and down the banks of the sea, when the great signs and wonders would appear in the heavens above, such as flying saucers and things. Now, I don't know about you, but I never heard Jesus say that. And his words, and I'm quoting, when Jesus said, and then he goes, such as flying saucers and things. So what he's doing is he's taking something that we don't know what is, we're going to spiritualize it, we're going to pretend that we know what it is, and we're going to tie it back to what Jesus said. So that is actually heretical. That's putting words in Jesus's mouth. But more than that, it's taking an element of control of the situation, instilling it as fear into the people's minds, and then through that fear, they look to him for the answers of the flying saucers question. 1955, Branham said, all these things coming up like little flying saucers is going to come to the church, and we, little we men coming through testing the power of God, all this fanaticism. If that statement were the only thing that he said, that's actually pretty good. He says, these guys are fanatics, these flying saucers, these wee little men. But remember, he is the leader of the revival, and this isn't the only thing that he said. This probably was a statement to an audience that were skeptical of this UFO craze and Jaggers, all of this nonsense. But Branham is working directly with Jaggers and Gordon Lindsay and others promoting the UFO doctrine, so he can't really hold it back. So let's keep reading. 1955, a little later in the year, he goes back to the signs of flying saucers through the air, where even the Pentagon don't know what to think about it. Signs in the heaven above. So he's kind of retracting from what he had earlier said. He's tying it back to the signs in the heavens. But listen to this. On May 22nd, 1955, Branham preached a sermon entitled The Ark. And if you think about flying saucers and think about the Ark, there's a lot of questions that can be raised here. He does get into the UFOs, but he ties it into some other weirdness that it gets really, really crazy. He's praying and he says, Father God, I pray today that the door is still open, that people coming from the east and west, north and south, gathering, great signs are happening in the skies, fearful sights, the atomics of the air has been split, hydrogen burnout, saucers are flying, missiles that can't understand, some sort of intelligence, they think, from somewhere else. They don't know, and science can't find out, mysteriously slipping down on the scene with lightning speed. Oh God, we're at the end. And then he goes into his pyramidology. He says, in the great pyramid that Enoch built, the last chamber is gone, ready for the king's chamber now. And to those of you who haven't been following the Christian Identity, British Israelism podcast and all of that theme, what he's tying this to is the British Israel notion that the Great Pyramid of Giza was built by Enoch, not the pharaohs. And he says that he claimed that it was a Bible written to the ancients, and that Bible was a prophetic mile marker of time for us to see when the end is coming. In other words, it was tied to his doomsday theology. So he's tying flying saucers to his doomsday pyramid theology, and he is talking about this some sort of intelligence. And that's where this starts to take a turn. The moment he introduces the flying saucers with the theme of the Ark, now it turns into a more devastating, more destructive theology. In 1956, the same year he began working with Jim Jones, that destructive theology now started to enter into his apocalyptic themes, and UFOs were part of this. 1956, in January 22nd, the junction time, he said, the United States is shaking. The great bureaus and so forth, in the great Pentagon and all of that, investigating supernatural things. And I want to pause there, because remember what he said. He rejected the idea of little green men and all of this. Well, now he's saying that it is supernatural. He says, flying saucers, what are they? Oh, they say, we've seen little men in them in all stories. They try to deny it, but they're there. Why? God said there would be great signs above, in the heavens above and on the earth. We got it. They're afraid. So by 1956, William Branham is fully on board, and that's the point in which this really goes crazy and off the rails. Because if Branham gets on board with the UFO doctrine, as the leader of the Healing Revivals, every single platform of ministry that's built on top of Branham, they all have to adopt it. So when Branham went in full force, now this gets off the rails crazy. Later that year, Branham began to notice the formations of the saucers. 1956, in November 25th, a blushing prophet is the title of the sermon. He said, you see it in the paper the other day where they're requiring science, the Pentagon, to answer the flying saucers. It wasn't myth. It wasn't something imagined. It was real. It was an intelligence. They flew in battle formation. They could stop. They could start. They could stop. They could tell it was an intelligence. They know it. The people laughed, and they said flying saucers made fun of it. Now, if you talk to a Branhamite, they'll tell you that William Branham totally rejected this UFO thing. He was against this fanaticism, and they'll usually point back to that quote that I referred to before. But remember, Branham was appealing to different audiences, and when he would go to a crowd that was a UFO fanatic crowd, he was preaching UFO doctrine full steam. When he went to a crowd that was a little bit skeptical, you can tell because he'll talk about all those other ministers that say the thing that he just said in other cities. And so it's a conundrum in trying to understand what's in the man's head. He's speaking on one side of the mouth to one crowd and the other side to a different one. But here's the point I want to make. This built up to a climax in 1965, and this was carried to the extreme that it eerily matched the Heaven's Gate cult. In 1965, in August 22, in the sermon entitled Christ is Revealed in His Own Word, he says, you see these little pockets going through the air. They call saucers, so forth. We better leave that alone. He stops himself. He says, here these people come up missing, you say. Don't hear from them. They're standing there and they're not there. That's the way the rapture is going to be. One of them will drop right down, and this terrestrial body will take on a celestial body. There's a lot of things that I want to mention with this quote, because this is probably, of all of his UFO theologies, this is the most important one, because it ties so many different themes we've talked about. The Christian identity doctrine had the idea that you had a celestial body out in space and you had a earthly body vessel here, and you would be reunited with your spiritual celestial body. So what William Branham did was he took the UFO theology, combined it with Christian identity, merged the two, and said that that's how the rapture is going to be. A UFO will sweep down, pick up your body, and take you up to your celestial body. That literally is what the man just said. Also, he is saying exactly what O.L. Jagger said, even though he had condemned O.L. Jagger and others for it. He says these people come up missing. In other words, the UFO comes down and allegedly kidnaps them. Well, in this theology that Jagger and others were preaching, the kidnappings weren't kidnappings per se. They were some sort of an abduction for a heavenly purpose, and that's what Branham is trying to say here. But Branham ties it strongly to his rapture theology. Now remember, this is 1965 in August. Branham dies just a few months later. So had this continued, there's a great chance it would have turned into another Heaven's Gate cult. It didn't, because he died. Fortunately, he died. But you can see how this progressed over time. It started with, yeah, there's signs and the wonders. We don't know what they are. And it went all the way to, you will be taken to heaven in a flying saucer. Now, here's where it gets really, really interesting. Many of you have seen the photograph that's hanging in many of the Branhamite churches. It's on their websites, of this cloud that has been fully debunked. You can find that in our Revival History series. William Branham claimed that the cloud was seven angels, and that seven angels came down and visited him in a location in Arizona. Unfortunately, while he was in Houston, Texas at the time, he claimed that he was there underneath the cloud and that it was given to him the revelation of the seven seals while he was under this cloud of seven angels. Not many people know it who are in Branhamism, and especially who are outside of Branhamism, But this actually began with a UFO theme, and it's very difficult to catch unless you pair the timelines of UFO theology, revivalist UFO theology, and what Branham is saying. But before there were seven angels, he starts talking about the stars that he was seeing in the V formation. He refers to it directly in 1962, before he goes out west to hunt. And again, that's a bigger history than this podcast can contain. But to summarize, he has this alleged vision that he was told to go out west by five angels. And he specifically says five, spelling grace, G-R-A-C-E, five, which is basic elementary math. He goes out there. He gets called to Houston, Texas, to help save a transgender murderer. While he's in Houston, Texas, this Thor missile detonated for the missile defense system and caused this massive unknown cloud ring. And so at the time, the U.S. Air Force and Vandenberg Air Force Base knew what this cloud was. William Branham learned about it later when he went back to Arizona and then back home and said, I was standing there under these seven angels. And the people had forgotten that he said five, not seven. But listen to what he says when he talks about those five, and keep this in mind. By this time in his ministry, he had taught that these UFOs were these things that look like lights in the sky, were actually investigating angels. So when he's associating an angel in the heavens to something as a sign, he's literally talking about this light object that you can't make, you can't tell what is, a UFO essentially. He says, and no more than the second group of birds came by, I looked to the west and looked like in the form of a pyramid. Now think V formation, form of a pyramid. Two on each side with one at the top, and five came out, the mightiest angels I saw in my life. So he literally just described a V formation. Two on each side, one at the top. That's a V formation. And he said, mightiest angels I ever saw in my life. They brought them into this constellation of a pyramid. So constellation, he's talking about stars or lights. And he says, these angels are five. Now, I thought the death angel would be one. Five would be grace, G-R-A-C-E. So what Branham is talking about here is a UFO V formation. And he goes out west. He allegedly is visited by seven angels, but unfortunately, according to the timeline we've been able to piece together, he was not there at all under this cloud that happened. But it all began with UFO theology, and almost nobody in William Branham's cult of personality is aware that it began with this UFO theology. We also talked about this in the Revival History series, but there was a UFO scientist named James McDonald, who is investigating the cloud ring. And if you go to any of the Branhamite defenders, they will mention James McDonald when they try to defend this cloud thing, because James McDonald was trying to prove that it was a UFO, and he created an initial report. This was the pre-investigation report that said that he was investigating this was higher than any cloud could form. And so because it was an unknown thing, the cult uses the, in fact, Branham used that as proof that this was seven angels. That's how weird this gets. What they don't give you is the second report where he actually went and determined that, no, this was nothing unusual. Also, what a Branhamite defender won't tell you is that James McDonald was a UFO chaser back during a time whenever UFO chasers were very frowned upon, much different than today's world, where now it's like this pseudoscience that's turned into, well, we don't know what these things are, but we admit that they exist. But he was a UFO chaser, and he chased it long enough to determine that it wasn't something that was out of this world. It was something that was provable. And so he abandoned that, but he compiled this big list of things that were unprovable for a congressional hearing that he was going to attend. Now, sadly, James McDonald became the laughingstock of the scientific community because he was a UFO chaser, and back then that was widely frowned upon. What a lot of people don't know also We talked about this in the Revival History series. He was ridiculed most heavily by people within Branham's cult following. According to ministers that were in William Branham's cult of personality, Perry Green, who is one of William Branham's strongest promoters and supporters, was confronting McDonald on multiple occasions, trying to ridicule him for not believing in seven angels instead of UFOs, and apparently pressured him to the extent that, combined with all the other things that he was facing, James McDonald sadly took his own life. And so this did actually end and result in a death, which is really sad. But when you consider the broad scope of everything that I've mentioned, from starting out as signs in the heavens that we don't know about and, you know, theology that's not really that destructive, to one of these days a UFO is going to come down and take you into heaven, this is a wide variety of mess. That's about all I can say. And for somebody who is supporting William Branham and promoting his 1933 prophecies, trying to resurrect the UFO themes that were coming from yesteryear, all I have to say is this: you probably need to do just a little bit more research, because most of it has been debunked. And this UFO theology, there's no need to resurrect it. Once you do, you're going to alienate every single person who now understands that, no, we're not going to be in a cult that talks about UFOs coming down to take us to heaven and giving us a celestial body and replacing this local body. So much more I could say about that, and I'll just let it go. If you've enjoyed the show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.